So I thank all of you for coming tonight, and I'm very proud that so many people turned out. It shows how people are concerned about this 200-year-old village, and they want the best for the community, and they want to come here, and they want to learn more about this project. They want to express their thoughts and their comments during the evening. There's going to be time for all of that. Quick agenda is, I'm going to do this initial introduction, and then we're going to have the Department of Public Service do a brief presentation. And then West Point's going to do their presentation, and then there's going to be approximately an hour's worth of time for questions and answers. Again, we hope to be out of here in 2 hours, but if we need a little more time, we'll certainly, I'm sure the participants would agree to stay. Lee and I, Lee being Lee Pommagier, town supervisor, and me being Chris Feaster, mayor of the Village of Athens, we thought it was time for a presentation by the participant, by the applicant, and by the people that are going to review the application. So tonight we have people that are knowledgeable about the project itself, and we also have people that are really knowledgeable about the process. And after this evening's over, hopefully you'll have a better understanding of that process and the project as well. And maybe they'll have a better understanding of what the Village of Athens stands for and what the people of the Village of Athens look for in terms of standards from any company that comes here to carry out a project within our confines. I keep mentioning the village, but this is also obviously a town project as well. In fact, the bulk of the project is going to be in the town. And so we welcome people that are from the town tonight, and welcome their questions and welcome their viewpoints. So I want to introduce the two principal people that are here tonight. We have Chris Hocker, who is the Vice President of Planning for Power Bridge. Power Bridge is a parent company of West Point Transmission. And Chris he'll be doing his presentation shortly. And to start off, we have Jeremy Plohm, who is a utility analyst with the New York State Department of Public Service. And he's also, I guess, in the Office of Energy Efficiency and the Environment. Did I get all that right? I hope I did. Close enough. And he's brought some people from his office as well to also answer any questions. So we're going to start off then with Jeremy. I'll remind everybody this is not an official village meeting or a town meeting. This meeting is going to be run by West Point and their personnel. And we're just here to carry out the introductions and to help facilitate the process. I thank you.
Would you like me to use the mic or just stand up?
Please.
Yep.
Please use the mic.
Sure.
Is that on?
It's
on. Well, again, my name is Jeremy Flaum. I'm from the Department of Public Service, Office of Energy Efficiency and the Environment. I want to thank everybody for coming out today. It's great to see so many people here for the early stages of this process. Just to give you a basic idea as to who the Department of Public Service are, we represent the public interest in these proceedings. We are not the Public Service Commission, we are staff of the Public Service Commission. So we don't make the final decisions on process, but we do participate and represent the public interest in these proceedings. Want to take a little bit of time, I'm going to try and keep it to around 15, 20 minutes if possible to cover the Article 7 process and how it is applied to the siting of electric transmission lines in New York State. So when does Article 7 apply for electric transmission facilities? Basically, for 100 to 125 kilovolt lines, 10 miles or longer, over 125 kilovolts, 10 miles or longer. So these are the big transmission lines that you see, and not the local distribution lines that bring power to your house. The West Point project, case 13T0292, is 82.8 miles of 345 kV, so it is an Article 7 process. The objectives of the Article 7 process are to minimize impacts, including environmental impacts, quality of life impacts, both during construction and operation of the facilities, to provide a forum for the resolution of issues from line location, where the facility is going to go, and also for resolution of matters of state and local laws. And this last one, I think, is most important for those of us that are here tonight. It's to provide an open process for citizens and local interest groups, municipalities, and state agencies. One quick note, some of you may be familiar with the State Environmental Quality Review Act, also known as SEQR. Article 7 projects are not subject to SEQR. However, the process is very similar, and so are the objectives. It requires environmental analysis, requires impacts minimization, and it allows for full public participation. So when we get an Article 7 application, what's usually included in that? Well, the location of the facility will be shown on maps and aerial photographs. Description of the line, where it's going, what the right-of-ways will be, where the substations will be, and a description of the need of the facility. An environmental assessment of the impacts of the proposed construction and operation of the facility. And a comparison of reasonable alternatives, from alternative routes to modifications of the proposed route to alternative technologies outside of the proposed transmission line. An Article 7 application is filed with the Secretary to the Public Service Commission. At the same time, it is also filed with municipalities that would be host to the facility, to the state legislators that whose areas the facility is proposed to be located, to state agencies, and it's made for public review, made available for public review at local libraries. I believe D.R. Everts is the local library here in Athens, is that correct? And it's also available for public viewing at the Public Service Commission website. And I'll have that website up for you later on at the end of the presentation for anyone that's interested in copying it down. The West Point project was docketed by the Public Service Commission as case number 13T0292. We, Department of Public Service, have a staff of engineers, environmental staff, legal counsel, consumer outreach specialist, and an administrative law judge is also assigned to the case. So all of these people will be participating in the review of the West Point Transmission Project application. There are several statutory parties to the Article 7 application. Statutory parties are automatically formal parties to the proceeding, and they include Department of Environmental Conservation, Secretary of State of New York State, Department of Agriculture and Markets, Office of Parks, Recreation, and Historic Preservation, and Department of Public Service staff. However, other individuals and parties may also become formal parties to the proceeding, and I'll explain the difference between formal and informal parties in a minute. Municipalities that host the line may become formal parties, residents of those municipalities, environmental and public interest groups, and utility companies all may become formal parties. As a formal party, we also call them active parties, you may participate in the evidentiary review of the project, and that will include asking discovery questions of the applicant about the application and the proposed facility, presenting written testimony and analysis, participating in the evidentiary hearings process, filing briefs and motions, and participating in settlement discussions if there are any. Formal party status must be requested unless you are already a statutory party. And in order to become a formal party, you have to submit a petition to the presiding administrative law judge with the Public Service Commission. For most Article 7 projects, not all, but many of them, there's an intervener funding that becomes available for the process. And this is established by the rules of the Public Service Commission, the New York State rules, and any municipality or other formal party may request funds for expert witnesses, consultants, and administrative and legal fees. The request for intervener funding must be submitted within 15 days after issuance of a notice of pre-hearing conference, and I'll explain that in a minute. Intervener fund requests must be submitted with the ALJ, and also copies must be presented to other parties, other formal parties in the proceeding. And there's a set of rules for, you know, information needs that need to be included for intervener funding requests. So basically, any application that's filed for a facility that's 125 kilovolts or more, when that application is filed, the applicant must also submit an accompanying intervener funding fee. And it really depends on the length of the line, how much that fee is, and then how much that fund becomes. The West Point project is 82.8 miles of 345 kV. So there is a fund for this available, and it would be $350,000 for intervener funding. The other way you can participate in the process is by becoming an informal party. And any individual or group of individuals can become informal parties to the proceeding. As an informal party, you can participate in public statement hearings, you can submit written comments about the project, and you can request to receive correspondence about the project. Anyone can comment on an Article 7 case, anyone can comment on this project. And written comments can be submitted to the Secretary of the Public Service Commission at 3 Empire State Plaza in Albany, New York, and I'll have that contact information available on the last slide of the presentation. Comments can also be submitted to the Secretary via email, and that will be up there as well. So where are we in the process right now? Basically right now, we are very early in the process for this project. So it's great to see everybody out here so early in the process, and there'll be lots of opportunities for you to continue to participate. The applicant, prior to submitting the application, published notice in the local newspapers, basically telling people that they were going to submit the application to the Secretary of the Commission. The application was then filed on July 1st of 2013, and the Secretary deemed the application deficient on August 2nd. In response to those deficiencies identified, the applicant submitted supplements on August 22nd and September 6th. And that's where we stand right now. The application has not been determined to be in compliance with the filing requirements. That decision will be made by this Public Service Commission in a future date. No, go back. The commission will have to make ruling on waiver requests for the filing requirements that were requested by the applicant in their application. The discovery process, which again is asking questions of the applicant about their application and about their project, is ongoing. You can file discovery now as a formal party, and that process will continue to go on throughout the proceeding. Once the application is determined to be in compliance with the filing requirements of the commission, the administrative law judge, the ALJ, will establish a pre-hearing conference. That's where I get to that point. Within 15 days after the judge sets notice of the pre-hearing conference, that's when requests for intervener funding are due. Following the announcement, intervener funding requests come in, the pre-hearing conference will occur, and then within 15 days after that, the judge will award the intervener funds. Within 60 to 90 days after the Public Service Commission determines that the application is in compliance with the filing requirements and it's complete, Within 60 to 90 days after that, there will be public statement hearings that will be held. That'll be another opportunity for us to all gather here. The administrative law judge will be here at that point, and you can make, express your comments and concerns about the project and learn more about the project. It'll be a similar type of proceeding as we're having here today, but a little bit more formal, and the administrative law judge will be there as well. Typical process for an Article 7 project and proceeding: once the application's complete, we enter the hearings phase. There'll be site visits to look at the proposed facilities. There'll be direct testimony, rebuttal testimony, hearings, and then post-hearing briefs and reply briefs. After that hearings process occurs, the administrative law judge typically completes what he calls, what's referred to as a recommended decision. There are then opportunities for formal parties to submit replies to that recommended decision, and then the Public Service Commission will make their decision on the project. Within 30 days, formal parties may appeal the Public Service Commission decision. Public Service Commission has basically three basic options. They can grant the certificate to the applicant with appropriate conditions for minimizing impacts, alternate locations, or alternate design. They may deny the facility if they determine that the facility is not needed, or if the impacts are too great, or if they determine that the facility is not in the public interest. Or they may approve any proposed settlements, if there are any. And we don't know at this point if there will be any settlement discussions. When making their decision, the Public Service Commission must make several findings for each project. The basis for these findings are the need for the facility, the probable environmental impacts, minimization of environmental impacts, and when they consider the minimization of environmental impacts, they have to give consideration to cost and alternatives. What part of the facility should be underground? It's important to note for this West Point project, the proposed facility is entirely underground except for the two converter station locations, one up here in Athens and one down in Buchanan, New York. The commission must determine whether the project is in conformance with state and local laws. However, the commission may determine to waive unreasonably restrictive local laws or ordinances if they determine that they are unreasonably restrictive. The commission must determine whether a facility will serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. Once a project is approved by the commission, there's various steps that must occur before construction can begin. The project developer will then go back and perform more detailed surveys and studies of the proposed project location. They will develop their final design plans, and they will submit what's called an Environmental Management and Construction Plan, or EM&CP. Sometimes, due to the more advanced studies that take place after a certificate is awarded, there may be minor deviations to the project center line that weren't as compared to the application center line. And this is due to opportunities for the certificate holder to then go out and perform more detailed studies and identify engineering and environmental constraints. However, there is a public review of an EM&CP. Formal parties may submit comments on the EM&CP, and there are opportunities for public to submit comments as well. There's also a separate approval process for the EM&CP by the Public Service Commission, and the commission may approve an EM&CP with modifications or conditions as appropriate. Once an EM&CP is approved, before the certificate holder can start construction, they must first obtain all their rights of way and access rights. Construction then occurs in accordance with the approved EM&CP plans. Construction includes clearing, grading, access to the facility construction, implementation of environmental controls and mitigation measures, and then restoration of the project location. Follow-up measures would include landscaping, drainage repairs, site monitoring, and ongoing right-of-way vegetation management plan. If you go to the Public Service Commission website, additional information can be found. Some of the information is what we just discussed just now, and there's also additional information. There's a guide to the Article 7 review process. We're actually right in the process right now of updating that guide, so that guide will be available hopefully later this week, the updated version. So if you're eager to check it out and it has some really useful information, the updated one has even better information. So maybe take a few days. We're hoping to get it up there hopefully in the next day or two. There are also links to various Article 7 projects, ongoing and certified. This project, I checked this afternoon, this project is on there, so you can go onto the website, click on the link, and then it'll take you to the DMM system, which basically has all the documentation that's been filed for the project, and you can look at the application, you can look at supplements, you can look at comments. The website also has links to the implementing regulations for Article 7 so that you can familiarize yourself with the rules and regulations for this process and for these projects. You can review the application, like I just said, using the DPS, Department of Public Service website, Article 7 page. You can submit your comments, if you like to the Secretary of the Public Service Commission at 3 Empire State Plaza in Albany, New York. If you'd like to submit comments on this project, we ask, just please note the name of the project, West Point Partners Transmission Project, and the case number, 13C0292. So this way, when the secretary receives your comments, she knows what project you're referring to and where to place it in the system. And you can also email your comments to the secretary as well. That concludes our presentation. And Susan, would you mind just keeping that up there in case anyone is interested in writing that information down? Does anyone have any questions for me on the Article 7 process? Sir?
Your slide here said that there were documents pending on the period 9-6, but on 9-13, there was a filing from the Dax Law Firm in response to your Appendix B, which is the guts of some of the things they're asking for forgiveness on. I'm assuming those are also on the website?
Anything that was filed through the secretary would be on the DMM system, yes.
I just wanted to ask this gentleman, are you referring to the request for waivers by chance?
That was, yeah, I don't want to take all night, but it's a response by their legal law firm about questions PSC asked relative to Appendix B, which is where a number of statements asking for relief
from certain ordinance, zoning, et cetera, et cetera.
That kind of thing, yes. Okay.
As part of the application, the applicant asked for relief for certain filing requirements.
I don't believe, sir, that it shows up in the file case 13T0292.
It is on the website. I just didn't access it.
Well, I accessed it through a CD-ROM that I probably wasn't supposed to have, or was it?
I don't know what CD-ROM you're referring to, but if you go to the DMM system, if you go to the link for the project through the DPS, anything that was submitted from the company for the project to the secretary will be available for you to click on and review.
Okay.
Lee?
I was just wondering if discovery started yet?
Yes, you can file discovery at any point. In the back?
Who is West Point Partners? Who are they?
I'm going to let Mr. Hocker answer that question.
Does not agree with your approval of your application, then what happens to your application? Do you adjust if the Army Corps tells you something that they think they don't agree with your approval on?
Well, like you just said, they're separate approval processes, and in order for the project to proceed, they are required to obtain all of the necessary permits. So our approval process would not supersede any other permit that they were required to obtain.
So the Army Corps process is not started yet? Do you know that?
I'll let Mr. Hocker answer where they are in that process, but they are separate permits and separate, you know, completely independent of each other.
Give us a typical time frame for this entire process?
It can really vary. We're very early in the stage right now, and it's a very long process. We really don't know when the commission is going to decide to rule on the waiver requests. So the clock really hasn't started ticking on this project. We're still in the application phase. Generally, this process doesn't occur in less than a year, although on some occasions it can. But there's a process that takes place, and there's opportunities for public comment and involvement that have to occur 60 to 90 days after the project is determined to be in compliance with the filing requirements. And there's an extensive review period.
I'm just curious, when this thing gets to a point of a public hearing, we often hear about public hearings on such issues, correct? Most people at least have the feeling when it gets to that point, and I actually spoke to a gentleman from the New York Public Service Commission, I believe his name was Ed Schramm, one of the higher up electrical people. You
okay.
Familiar with the name?
I'm familiar with it, yes.
Okay. I got to speak to the gentleman.
Okay.
And I asked various questions. And in all reality, he didn't answer any of my questions. His basic response was, I can't speak to that. I can't answer that. I said, okay, hold on, because we're going no place. You don't want to respond to that. You are not going to give me an answer to that. And basically, that's what he said. So I of course don't have this phone conversation recorded, but that is the way this went for quite some time. Any question I had asked him about this project, he did not have an answer for. I asked him one final question as I started my comment to you with public hearings. And I said, when this project gets to a point whereby we see publications, information about public hearings, is it not true that in the majority of cases, those public hearings become a moot point and mean nothing other than, in this example, the folks from West Point, the folks from the New York Public Service Commission, their attorneys, Dax Law Firm, will sit at a public hearing and field questions and give answers or not give answers, but oftentimes when a project gets to that point of public hearings, is it not 99% done? I want your honest opinion.
I will give you my honest opinion. We represent the public interest in these proceedings. I do not work for the applicant. I do not work for any applicant. I work for New York State. And my job is to represent the public interest in these proceedings. These events like today and the public statement hearing that will be held later on are the most important part of my job. This is where we learn from you, your concerns. This is where we work with the municipalities. The fact that we have so many people here tonight is a great thing for me. I don't work to promote projects. I work to make projects better or, find a reason that the project doesn't work. If it doesn't work, we represent the public interest.
Okay, so you do give recommendations to the people that make decisions?
We are completely independent from the applicant. We represent the public interest in these proceedings. We make our decisions and recommendations to the commission independently of any proposed application. We make our recommendations based on the public interest, both at the local levels and at the end of the overall state level of the public, but we represent the public interest.
Okay, thank you.
And let me add to that. When we're in the public statement hearing, the reason that it's required that we hold public statement hearings within 60 to 90 days of an application being determined to be in compliance with the filing requirements is that we want to make sure that those public statement hearings are held early in the process so that it's not too late to take back what we've learned during those hearings and review the project with those comments in mind.
Okay, again, I have to ask another question here. This was going to be part of time, I hope, that I would be allowed at the question and answer session, but since we are into this, there's another reason I brought up this point to you, and that was I have spoken with Ms. Brown a couple of times in phone conversations, and we spoke earlier this evening. I introduced myself, and we have spoken. And in one of our conversations not long ago, I had asked her about the process. I didn't get into all the other things I would love to speak about tonight, but I asked about the process. And my question to her, one of my questions to her at the time, and this was just a few weeks ago, what happens now? You've submitted an application to the New York Public Service Commission. Is there a time frame involved? When would you expect or hope to hear back from the Public Service Commission whether your application is accepted or not? I know there's processes, there's been changes, discrepancies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I've been following it all. Thousands of pages of it. Okay, but Ms. Brown did say to me that she is hoping to hear from the Public Service Commission by November. Would that be, November's like a couple weeks away, or till the end of November is 6 weeks away.
Understood.
It's in the very near future is my point.
Right.
So I guess I'm saying, did Ms. Brown state something correctly, or just something that is anticipated or hoped by her and was pointed?
I think Ms. Brown was hoping that she would hear from, and I can't speak for her, but I think what she meant was she was hoping that the commission would rule on the filing completeness of the application by November, which means that really only starts the clock on the review process. We're still in the preliminary stages here. So she wasn't, I don't believe she was saying she hopes that they will make a decision on the app, on the project, on whether or not it should move forward. She was stating that she hopes they will rule simply on whether the application is complete and on their motion for waiver requests for certain filing requirements.
Okay.
So we're still very early in the process.
All right, well that's okay. Should be a major concern of everyone.
Susan, is that correct?
Right. I believe he was asking at the time when the public hearings would be held, okay. And I was explaining that they would be scheduled once the application was deemed complete and gave a rough timeline for that.
So if the commission decided in November that they would approve the waiver request and that the application was complete, then that would start the 60 to 90 day window in which we would have a public statement hearing before the administrative law judge.
Okay. I just want to keep things clear in my mind.
Sure, absolutely.
And I hope it's information for our people who represent us here in the town and the village and information for everyone. So, okay, thank you.
Good evening. You stated numerous times that you represent the public interest, and I wonder to what extent a small community, rural community, could be considered the public at the expense of New York City. I mean, if this is a project to evaluate the needs of New York City, the community of 1 or 2,000 people doesn't seem like a public interest issue. I want to know whether what commitment your agency has to the public being us, the local community that's affected.
We look at the project from several standpoints, from the public interest. Need is part of that, and whether or not this project is needed, whether the power to where it's going is needed. That is part of what we weigh and part of what we evaluate in terms of looking at the public interest. But the other part is, what impacts will construction and operation of the facility have on where it's being built? And those two factors are equally important for us.
Again, there are maybe 100 houses, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, in your calculations, if you're trying to feed a city of, you know, 10 million people, does 100 people being impacted factor in at all?
Absolutely.
That's what I want to know.
And one of the big things that we do is not only look, just, it's not simply a thumbs up or thumbs down, but if we say, look, we really believe that the power is needed, but is this the right project to bring that power? And the other issue is, okay, we believe this is a good project, but it's not located where it should be. There are alternative locations, there are alternative ways to get from point A to point B without impacting, you know, the certain people or certain environmental features or certain cultural resources. So yes, this is all part of the process. Need is one part of it, but impacts minimization and mitigation are equally important factors, and it doesn't matter if it's a village of 100 or a village of 100,000. Go ahead, sir.
Do you believe there are good alternative routes?
We're in the process of evaluating that, and it's very early in the process, and so it's not appropriate for me to tell you whether or not I think that any alternatives are better than any other alternatives at that time. But I will promise you that that's one of the processes that we're going through, is to look and evaluate all the alternatives that have been proposed and other alternatives that may not have been proposed.
Do you or someone in your office actually walk the route?
Absolutely, yes.
Nope,
we get out in the field. I've already been out in the field on several locations, and we will continue to look at not only the proposed route but alternative routes, and we get out in the field and we, you know, see what the lay of the land is, and we identify environmental resources, and we identify cultural resources. And yeah, I mean, field work is a big part of what we do. It's not just sitting at a desk and looking at a desktop.
I have a question. Can you back that up to page 17, please? I think it's page 17, I'm not sure.
Stop me when I get there.
Right, oops, move it ahead one.
There we go.
Okay, what did those last two sentences actually mean?
Starting with conformance with state and local laws,
yes,
and regulations?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I mean, a specific definition, because to me, it looks to me like if we just constantly say no, what other alternative would there be? If you say that this is in an absolute public interest,
mm-hmm,
what are the alternative, if we just basically say no, we don't want this, what is the other alternative?
It depends. I mean, let me address the conformance with state and local laws and regulations is simply saying, you know, for a facility, an application for the facility to be built, they need to comply with not just state laws, but all of the local laws as well. So they can't, if there's local laws that restrict construction techniques or facility design, they have to comply with those. However, if they are considered, determined by the commission to be unreasonably restrictive for the facility, for the process, the commission can, you know, grant a waiver for those, essentially. The other part of that, the commission needs to determine whether the facility will serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. That's one of the findings that the commission needs to determine, whether or not the project serves the public as a whole and whether it's necessary. But that's only one finding. Other findings are the nature of the probable impacts, the minimization of environmental impacts. And so the commission weighs all of these considerations, not just one.
Asked for 38 waivers so that they don't have to comply with our state and local regulations? Because if you read the there's about 38 of them, and one of them is so that they can operate 24 hours a day while we're sleeping, right through the night. Another one is so that they don't have to comply with our noise regulations, our pollution regulations, our environmental regulations, our wetland protection laws. There's 38 of them. Who decides? Can you give us in layman's terms maybe, how are these either approved or disapproved?
That's the determination of the Public Service Commission.
Right, so I know that, but how many people vote on that in the end?
The commission, I believe, is made of 5 members currently.
5 members vote on whether they waive that or not.
Correct.
And will we have the names of those 5 people, or we have to give everything to Burgess, and then she'll distribute our information to those 5 people that have the...
If you any concerns you have on the project, you can submit those comments to the secretary, to the commission, and then they are put on the official record for the project, and the commission members review anything that is on the official record. So your comments will be received and reviewed by the commission and the administrative law judge for the proceeding.
So if what you're saying is true and they have to conform with our state and local regulations, that all goes out the window, right? If they get approved on all their waivers.
If the waivers were approved, but there's no guarantee that the commission would determine that the waiver, each waiver that is requested will be approved. The commission needs to make a finding that the request demonstrates that the local law or ordinance is unreasonably restrictive. And just because they request that a local law be waived does not mean the commission's going to view it as unreasonably restrictive.
Questions and comments. Let's start with an easy one. You mentioned settlement.
Correct.
Can you explain what that means, please?
Yes, in some cases for an Article 7 project, formal parties will agree to essentially sit down and negotiate and try and come up with what's called a joint proposal on either the entire project proposal or parts of the project. So they essentially settle on issues that they can agree upon. Doesn't need to be all or one, though. Sometimes settlements are partial settlements.
You mentioned consumer outreach. To which consumers do you reach out, and what does that consist of?
That means public outreach, so all of you, anyone that would be affected by the proposed facility.
So you said this project may actually take place. There are local concerns, including local, to the extent there's going to be excavation and underground utility installation, this ought to be coordinated with other concerns that exist here, including local gas distribution, sewer and water improvement, and local underground electric distribution. What kind of consideration might we expect for those essential parts of our concern?
That's part of, you know, reviewing the project is looking at, you know, what the existing utility conditions are, what the existing cultural resources are, environmental resources are. So, and ongoing projects and construction plans. So all of those things are considered when we look at a project. You know, we're not going to put a project with, you know, in a location where it doesn't fit because there are, you know, sewer lines and gas lines and there's no room for it.
Well, that's not quite what I was talking about. We have issues here locally with sewer and water line repairs and infrastructure improvements that need to be done. We have concerns that rather than simply being used and exploited by people like the Athens Gen, that gas line be used for local benefit with local distribution. And again, if there is going to be burial of underground 350,000 volt lines for the benefit of New York City, that there should be consideration of underground local distribution so that our trees can flourish, so that our community can benefit. How much of that kind of concern is going to be central and conditional of your consideration and possible approval of this proposal?
And I think Chris can speak a little bit better to this, but as the project...
I understand
that, but questions that are specific to this particular project, I think that Chris would be better served to answer. But I will try and address your question. The project as proposed is not proposed to distribute power to this area. And so that's not being considered at this time. This is simply to transmit the power from the substation here south.
Well, I would suggest to you that that's a serious inadequacy in your representing the public, namely us, and that these correlated issues ought to be an essential conditional part of your representing us. If that kind of massive 350,000 volt line is going to be using us, there should be consideration given to local gas distribution, that means households and businesses within the village and town of Athens, improvement of our sewer and water lines, which are also underground, and local electric distribution to businesses and residences within the village and town. And you cannot stand there and state that you represent us if you are not going to make that a conditional part of considering this project. Fourth item, that'll be my last for the moment. Has to do with, you mentioned alternative technology. Now, since the very underlying notion of long distance, high voltage electric transmission is inherently inefficient, to the tune of loss in transmission, I believe, of somewhere in the range of 60%, and since apparent goal is to close one or more of the nukes at the Tappan Zee, and since there is already underground cooling water access from our Hudson River to the Athens Gen, the pattern starts to emerge of the contrary of siting generation where it's needed and used, but rather, since the resistance in light of Chernobyl, Fukushima, Three Mile Island, to move it to areas where there are fewer people to resist it, this is the pattern that's emerging. So my question is, in terms of the inherent inefficiency, not of long distance high voltage transmission, and the inherent danger of nuclear, what kind of alternative technology is being considered? And in view of public interest and necessity, is it New York's necessity, New York City's necessity, our necessity in terms of these environmental problems and environmental energy use inefficiencies?
The necessity comes down to, is the project necessary? Is the power that it's bringing to where it's going, is that power needed? So that's the necessity part of it. And in terms of an alternatives assessment, I mean, these are all things that we look at, you know, alternative technologies, alternative methods for getting the power there, whether that's the siting of a generating plant on an alternative location as opposed to, you know, building a long transmission line. That is something that is evaluated and considered by staff.
That is considered.
Yes.
Short distance and local generation.
Correct.
Thank you.
Let's be clear, that's not your mandate. Your mandate is actually to assess this project. You're not going to be giving recommendations to West Point to say build a plant closer to New York City.
We don't give recommendations to an applicant, but we could very well, and I'm not saying we would or would not do this for this case, but there have been in other cases times when the Department of Public Service staff has made the recommendation that a transmission line as proposed should not be built, and as an alternative, a generating facility of some sort be developed in its place, yes. At this time, the application is for a transmission line, but that does not influence in any way what staff would propose as an alternative.
Yeah, I just want to make sure we're realistic about what your mandate is, what West Point is planning on doing, and an alternate plant in another location is not it.
Understood.
Simultaneously applications going out to other towns, or do they have to redo the whole thing again?
There are multiple applications for multiple transmission lines and projects ongoing at once, yes.
And so they just choose the town that with the least resistance? Is that how it would go?
No. They are only, this project, this application is by West Point is only for this project. But, before the commission and before the Department of Public Service, there are different projects that are proposed by different companies for different needs and different, different purposes. And so, this is one project that we're here to discuss tonight, but that doesn't mean that there are all kinds of other projects that are ongoing and in different stages of the process as well, yes.
The amount of time and effort it takes to make this proposal for them, do they just spend all that time on this line going through Athens and have to start again for another town?
I'll let Chris, ask the question to Chris again. He can explain how the company manages its operations a little bit better, I think.
Do you know if there are other proposals for the Athens generating plant that are coming to you in the near future?
I'm really not sure as to what might be coming down in the future. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Is this project in any way related to the Champlain Hudson Power?
No, it is not.
It's totally separate from that.
It's a separate project, yes.
Could you define for us what, in the context of this application, what the Public Service Commission defines as the public interest? How broad is that? How broad is your mandate to protect the public interest specific to this application?
It's not the statement that the language, but the public interest is not specific to this project any more than it is any other project. But it is representative of all the projects, and that the public interest, again, it goes back to need and impacts, and that's it's a weighing mechanism. I mean, no one is more important than the other, but that they have to make these findings as for need and impacts, and both carry equal weight.
No, I understand that, but could you be more specific about the extent to which you weigh the needs of the end user against the needs of the, in this case, the village of Athens, and specifically the people who live on North Vernon Street, how do you manage that calculus? It's a pretty tricky thing to do.
Well, if we determine that the need isn't there for the end user, then that becomes a fairly easy conclusion to draw about anything else. But if it's determined that there is a need for the end user, then you evaluate, what are the impacts, what are the needs of the communities where these this project is proposed to be built, and that's where we really get into alternatives and other options to minimization and mitigation of those impacts. And so, again, it's really a sort of a balancing, and there's really no clear answer for, you know, will we give 90% here in time or anything like that. I mean, it's 50-50, and it's a consideration that, you know, gets as the process moves along, that these are things we evaluate, both whether the project is needed from a power standpoint and what the needs are of the people and communities that would be affected. And hold off for 1 minute. I'm not sure. I mean, I know I've been up here for about an hour, and I don't want to occupy the entire night, but I don't want to leave anybody hanging with their questions either. So how do you want to handle this?
Yeah, I think right now, with everybody's forbearance, we should move on to the next presentation. You're going to stay around.
I'll be available, yes, and you know, willing to meet with anybody.
Jot your questions down for Mr. Plum, and then we'll go back to him later on.
Sorry that, you know, I have to leave people with their hands raised, but I'm available for as long as you need tonight. Thank you.